All right, now we're live. So, cool. Welcome, Chris. You're pretending to be stuck for us there. let's see. This is our 10th live chat for Horror Makes Us Happy. We are talking to Mr. Kareem Hussain, cinematographer and writer. Previously has worked on Possessor, Hobo with a Shotgun, Infinity Pool, and Orphan First Kill. Welcome.
You've done so many good movies.
Thank you.
And you've got something new coming out. As a matter of fact, I think you said it was this weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I have a movie called Forbidden Fruits, directed by Meredith Alloway, that just hit North American cinemas this past Friday. So that's a movie I was director of photography on, and I'm very happy with it. So hopefully people go out to see it.
And you mentioned the writer was...
It's produced... Diablo Cody's one of the producers of it. It's written by Meredith Alloway and Lily Houghton. It's based on a play that Lily Houghton wrote. Sort of like a strange film stage play, in a sense. A bit like how they used to do these American film theater movies in the 70s. Movies like The Maids and Man in the Glass Booth and things like that. It's sort of an interesting thing to make visual, to flex different muscles to try to make something that was a stage play into something very dynamic and stuff. And Meredith was great to collaborate with on that. So it's out now. Everyone can see it.
Cool. Being a stage play, is it, how can I say this? Is it restricted set-wise, or do you have multiple locations?
The whole thing takes place in a shopping mall that was a real shopping mall in Toronto. We shot it in a shopping mall that was like not a disused shopping mall or anything. It was a functioning shopping mall. So basically, we had to shoot the whole movie at night when people weren't shopping. You know, most of it, most of the movie was done at night, and any sort of day scenes in the shopping mall had to be done in the morning at the tail end of a filming day before the customers and the workers would show up. We had a lot of mall walkers infiltrate the set sometimes. We even filmed some of them and put them in the movie. It was sort of, you had to flex your Dawn of the Dead muscles. I went back and looked back a lot at a lot of the making ofs, the original Dawn of the Dead, the Document of the Dead, and things like that, to see a lot of the problems that they had. And even though we're talking, you know, multiple years later, we still ended up having many of the same problems shooting in a functioning shopping mall that they had on Dawn of the Dead. You know, and then you had a very limited amount of time to go in. And, you know, one thing photographic I'm particularly happy about is we were able to recreate the illusion of daylight from the skylights coming down in a completely pitch black shopping mall. It was a massive.
How did you do that? Just giant floodlights coming in through the skylights, I guess?
We would bounce a lot of light off of whatever reflective surface we would find on the ceilings. So we would probably, we would aim, you know, relatively strong lights to anything white up there, anything of a lighter color that we can bounce it off of. And it ended up working, no thanks to the sensitivity of the new cameras. We shot this on a camera called the Arri Alexa 35. Which really, you know, opens up so many possibilities in terms of photographically what you can achieve with a movie while still retaining a soft patina. We did a lot of the tricks we did on Possessor and Infinity Pool to give it that softer look. Orphan First Kill, even though that movie is probably a little too soft, but you know, we did a lot of the same vintage lens tricks and things like that because it is all women also in a shopping mall. It's sort of a Heathersy, The Craft, Mean Girls type of movie. Are pictures that people have compared it to. So there was also some glamour lighting and things like that we have to think of. And then as the film progressively gets more horrific, we we change that around a little bit.
Okay. It's a little darker as the gore or as the horror.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, you know, the horror in the movie is really put towards the last third of the movie. It's a rare genre picture today where it doesn't try to offload everything right at the beginning. It's really a slow burn, and it's really a comedy. There's a lot of irony to everything, second degree to everything. You know, those who enjoyed a movie like Jennifer's Body or Heather's or something like that, it might be for them. It's not for everybody. Not everyone's going to like it. It's such a unique thing that it's probably going to be a love it or hate it. But, you know.
It's of like similar to what the guest that we interviewed today, we were talking about, right, Steve? Like, and she mentioned that at some point you kind of need almost like a palate cleanser of a film, like something fun. Mm-hmm. It's not so serious, just something sometimes, fun, with a little bit of gore and killing as well.
Yeah, that it is exactly that. It's, you know, meant to be primarily just a fun, good time, and it targets sort of a very interesting demographic. I think it's really, you know, a movie for young women, queer community. You know, it's like it's more. It's not what you get every day when you go out to see a horror movie, you know. So that's fun for me to work, you know, within that zone, and to do something a little bit more comedic, you know. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. It's funny that until you said that, mentioned it being set in a mall, it didn't occur to me, you know, with you being set up in Toronto there, that at least down here in the lower states, malls have fallen quite a bit out of favor, but you know, especially during the winter up there, you guys could have, for lack of a better phrase, a captive audience, or you know, people who would like to still participate in shopping inside of a mall where it's air conditioned or heated in this case.
I mean, malls are doing terribly here too. Don't worry.
Here you said it was an active mall, like
It's the same thing everywhere. I mean, obviously there'll be a base group of people that will go in, but you know, I think mail order and the overlords of you know, click a button consumerism have definitely had their impact on malls and physical shopping up in Canada as everywhere. So yeah,
if nothing else, you give that mall some extra business on top of the business they already had.
Yeah, well, it was an empty store. We took it was actually a Nordstrom's that had closed that we took over, and we were able to make our own fake store over there. And because, you know, there's been some budget cuts in Ontario, the province that I'm in, and specifically Toronto. We had the Ontario Science Center, which used to be this wonderful individual building where people could take their children to go have all these cool science experiments and things like that. That all closed, and they put it in the shopping mall right beside our store. So we had to wait for the Ontario Science Center to close to be able to film every day. And if you're really careful, you could see Ontario Science Center signs in the background. We tried to hide them the best we could, but you know, if you really know what to look for, you'll find it.
Cool.
The movie set in Texas.
What was I going to ask you? There was something about. Well, can set that aside for a minute instead of trying to dig it up. Maybe it'll come to me later. We had talked briefly before we started recording about the last time that we talked to you, which I looked it up. It was back in 2021. So
wow.
5 years ago. Yeah.
So I was re-listening to the interview, and I was an older one, I could tell, because I did the intro.
Some of the topics that came up during that call were the extremes of humanity, pushing boundaries, and philosophy. And was kind of curious if any of those topics do you think have come up in your work since then, or any of the things that you have found yourself enjoying since then?
Well, I mean, certainly Infinity Pool, which came out in 2023. So after that interview, is all about that stuff. It's a very political film. It's very much a movie about the rich going into poor countries and taking advantage of the local populace and corrupt governments, doing their best to accommodate the whims of money coming in. And even if that means killing the locals, to be able to kill with impunity. Of course, if you've seen Infinity Pool, spoiler alerts if you have not, you know, and then they clone the rich people to be able to execute people who commit the murders, and then
man, that gets out of hand. And it almost becomes like a fetish to go out and commit murders, and just because of the fact that you'll just be cloned.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, obviously that's a metaphor for all sorts of stuff that's going on in the world.
Yeah, it could be applied to several different things, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, I think since we last spoke, the world has gotten significantly...
Has the divide become... Well,
I don't... You know, there might be a few events you can take note of. So it's been, you know, it's rough. I mean, you know, like even something like... it's hard... to sort of fathom what's going on now and how extreme everything is getting. It's really, you know, it's tough to wake up in the morning and open the news and say, what's next? You know, if you thought 2025 was bad, well, wait till you get 2026. And, you know, and the beginning of 2026, you know, gave us a few pretty brutal zingers from already brutal scenarios. So, you know, obviously movies like Infinity Pool are a form of rebellion against that kind of thing. It's for us, we saw Infinity Pool a bit like our, it's obviously a much softer film, but it's sort of like our Sallow, you know, movie that I love very much because I find Sallow is very much a rebellion against fascism. This may come as a huge shock. I don't like fascism. So, I am quite against it. So, Infinity Pool, even though it was before January 2025 and before even October 2023, when things started to get pretty fucked, it was sort of about those themes.
I didn't think about it, but you're right. And it takes place on a fictional island, right?
Yeah.
Island that's run by a fascist dictatorship regime. So,
right.
Yeah, you think, like, going back to watching that movie at that time in that year, it's a foreign concept, you know? It's this other land where these people are oppressed. And fast forward 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
here we are. So it's I believe in the 1970s Vietnam era horror film. I think through the genre it is a way to rebel your early 70s and then the aftermath, like all the great, like Night of Living Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, all these movies that had politics in them. And socioeconomic, or even Chainsaw 2, which is, literally about fucked up veterans and Reaganomics and things like that. It's, I believe genre pictures, not everyone, but the ones that, like, particularly the ones that I I do with Brandon Cronenberg, and there's a bunch of stuff brewing I can't talk about, but they touch on subjects.
Antiviral, did you not?
Yes, I did as well.
Not so much about fascist regimes, but that is like another, I think, metaphor for society and just culture shift and things like that, like the obsession with celebrity germs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Antiviral is again about this sort of, I guess, predating at the time we did Antiviral social media. It wasn't to the extent of like the TikTok and Instagram and I even know what else. I'm not on X or any of those things very willingly. Don't want to, get in those things. I detest social media. I hate that I'm even on the little ones I'm on, but got to get the word out for your project somehow, which is why I only post professional things. Yeah, I only post professional things on social media. Also because of my name. My name puts me in a different category in terms of the, fascism I face going to the United States and various other countries. I mean, it's very tricky, particularly with the way it's going in the United States. I'm a fucking atheist. I'm the least dangerous person demographic you will ever find in the world. I believe in peace. Mm-hmm. And, just because I have this name suddenly and, I got a tan, all this stuff I get shoved in, this category, and it's really really interesting to see. For a while, I saw definite changes after September 11th when I was going to the United States. Like I was September 11th, 2001, of course. My name was similar to somebody on a no-flight list, so I know all the back rooms at the border where they would put people in and shake you down and everything, and then finally they cleared me. And since then, I've gotten two legal U.S. work permits to make movies in the States, you know, like, and I think the U.S. government know more about me than I know about myself, you know. And that's the thing. Like, I passed through all the Euro-K boxes. But nowadays, even so many immigrants that have passed through the Euro-K boxes are getting harassed. So I don't quite know what to do with that, considering, you know, most of my work colleagues are Americans. Most of the movies I make are Americans. I have so many American friends that I love dearly that are going through such difficult times faced with this. So for me, it's a very disturbing thing, because I love so much about the artistic and genre community in the States. Like, there's so many good people there, and I feel here. Really,
we're just trapped in a bubble of asshole right now.
Yeah, but that's fucked. Like, I feel really bad for everybody that has to deal with all that face to face, and the rest of the world has to deal with it, you know, in a way. I mean, in many ways. And all the various things going on through all of the connections. But yeah, it's been rough. So I guess a movie like Infinity Pool is more pertinent than ever. I mean, there is a wave of people who just want to relax and have fun and not get too heavy when they see a movie, because the world is so heavy, and I get that. And for that crowd, here's Forbidden Fruits.
There you go. Yeah.
I was just about to say, that one's even more topical. Or not topical, but, you know, more of a break.
Yes, it is a break. You know, I mean, it deals with more interpersonal, certainly a lot of female dynamics within groups, and a lot of the patriarchal expectations put upon those groups, and the consequences of that, and how their relationships work within that. So it's a very interesting movie. It's, you know, mostly female run. That was great. You know, it's like just having mostly female heads of department, female writer, female director. That was like, you know, designer. There was a lot of women on the crew. And in my camera team, I made sure, and I always do anyways, to have a very diverse camera team. So there's definitely, you know, I try to make it as gender equal as I can. Just don't hire the most predictable people, because, you know, just me, my name on the slate becomes a statement in a certain thing, particularly on an American picture, you know, a larger studio American picture or something like that. So, you know, because if you look at something like in the American Society of Cinematographers, if you look down the list of everybody who's an accredited member of the American Society of Cinematographers, you'll look how many cinematographers have a Muslim name in that list, and the answer is zero.
Really?
Yeah.
Zero.
Whereas they at least have a visibly Muslim name. Whereas in Canada, for the Canadian Society of Cinematographers, of which I'm a member, there's plenty, you know. So, you know, hopefully that'll change. You know, I would love to apply to join the American Society of Cinematographers, but I don't think the next few years are the right time.
That's not a good time. That's not,
yeah.
Things are different.
Yeah. I don't think now's the right time for that, sadly. But, you know, it's just sort of something I've always kind of dealt with in my life. You know, like, I started making movies in Quebec. You know, I speak French perfectly. My wife is from France. Yes. Like, I'm, you know, I've made Francophone films. I've directed films in French. My mother is from Quebec. But because I grew up in Ottawa, which is a more Anglophone space, they, you know, considered me to be an Anglophone first within the Quebecois film industry, which is a very, at that time, now it's way different. There's much more diversity in the Quebec film industry. There's a lot of young people that have come out. I haven't shot a movie in Quebec for well over, I don't know how many years, but a lot of them. You know, but when I was actively working, it was a bit of a different scene. You know, you'd get a bit more kind of stuff today that would make people melt, but you know, back then you're just like, ah, whatever, moving on. You know, you know, so it wasn't always easy. Within the genre, the genre community is one of the most open communities out there. The genre community is one of the communities that will accept everybody, because it doesn't matter what your race, gender, sexual preference, or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you're a horror fan, you're a horror fan, and yeah, you're a member
same
of the
family. Same team.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're all on the same team here, team genre, and that's really what it is, because you're already starting from a place of marginality. You're already starting from a place, you know, anybody who was a horror kid, we're all alienated. We weren't, you know, popular. We were all sort of, you know, on the sidelines reading our, you know, famous monsters, Fangoria, you know, Gore Zone. You know, for the Gen Xers, and things like that. It was, you're already starting from a point of marginality. So of course you're going to be more open to accepting people that are considered marginal by the mainstream, because it's sort of a one of us scenario, you know, welcome freaks.
Yeah. Google gobble.
Yeah. Google gobble, Google gobble. Yeah.
Although it's kind of funny, because also at the same, very same time, there are some people in, you know, horror fans who are very, I won't say vocal, you know, that's part of it, but opinionated, shall we say? Yeah. I mean, it's not the majority. It's not the majority by far, but there are definitely a few that I've seen that, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the byproduct of the frustration of, I mean, like any time people take this kind of stance, it's a frustration over something beyond the initial thing. Either it's poverty, or either it's, you know, like frustration of inequality of the way things are going, and you got to find a scapegoat, or maybe it's just, you know, the environment you grew up in. I don't fucking know.
I think there are a certain number of people who like to bitch.
Yeah, of course, but I try to keep away from that, because it's just completely uninteresting to me. Yeah. You know, like, who cares? Like, just sitting there and bitching, how's that going to help anything? You know, it'll help nothing. If you, you know, just sitting there bitching, it's for what? You know, unless there's a viable solution or a viable sort of reason that doesn't impose anything on anybody. You know, forces something against a person's will. I mean, I guess that's also why therapists exist. Like, go to a fucking therapist if you're going to just bitch relentlessly, and don't go online. It's like there's this freaky desire to have an instant answer to everything these days.
And well, we are the generation of instant gratification.
Well, yeah.
The last couple of generations, really.
Well, yeah, but maybe it's not so bad to take a moment to sit back, reflect on the emotion before posting it.
No time for that.
Well, you know, I don't participate in those kinds of things. So, you know, if I did, I mean, I would find countless death threats against me saying, ah, this asshole, this, that, you know, and I would get a lot of that. But I would get a lot of it at the start of my career, and a lot of racist shit, too. You didn't believe all the racist shit that was posted about me at the beginning of my career. They don't know me, you know, and everything, but it's that's what racism is. It's just like fear of something different, and fucking just being insane without even listening to people and being open to listening to what people have to say and seeing things from another person's perspective, right?
Yeah. Like, listening is definitely part of it, yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to do?
Change topic. That's
survive. I have a question. Since you brought up Infinity Pool, I could have sworn it had been released when we interviewed you back then, but
if it was not. If it was 2021, probably the two movies that I had that were released 2021-2022 were Orphan First Kill, Orphan 2, and everybody's favorite movie, The Firestarter remake.
Wait.
I liked it.
Hey, thanks. It's not that bad, folks.
No. people, there are purists that will hate it on because of that, but the reboots happen and they will be different.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people...
but I'm like the biggest soapbox for anti-MCU films because they're not like the comics.
Yeah.
Anyway, on the topic of Infinity Pool, mm-hmm. I don't know if I asked you in our interview if it had come out at that time, but I did want to ask, there's a scene near the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Was it intentionally stylized like the end of, I think it was The Graduate, when they're driving away on the bus and they're both just sitting next to each other? They have that kind of newlywed vibe, but then they slowly realize, like, ah, fuck, our relationship is based on a lie or something like that. Or it was nonverbal, but they had this look, like just things were good, but then they weren't going to be good. And I remember Infinity Pool, there was a similar scene, not quite the same vibe, because their vibe was more just like, we just went through some fucked up shit and we're just going home because we're tired. But I always thought that the framing was just like, it was very reminiscent of the end of The Graduate.
No, I mean, we didn't think of The Graduate when we did it. I think that's a great analogy, though, because certainly thinking back on it, it is a similar thing. We were this is a part of the narrative. Like, there was various cuts of the movie where the movie even just ended with that bus ride, early edits of the movie and things like that. You know, we didn't think of a specific movie at all, really, to emulate a specific movie when we were doing Infinity Pool. When we do any movie with Brandon, we have homages and we look at stuff and we have inspirations, but then we always try to build upon it and do something different because we just don't want to copy stuff. But I think thematically and sort of the vibe of it is certainly a bit similar to The Graduate, you know, which is a lovely bummer. Exactly. It does have that.
But then, like, they've been through some shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that sort of sense of it, that was all done in a real bus in Croatia when we were shooting. And
was it Croatia where you shot it?
We shot it in Croatia and Hungary. In the two countries, the main resort was in Croatia, and basically everything off of the resort was in Hungary. The bus stuff and a lot of the driving business was in Croatia as well. And you know, it was done pretty on the fly, like, you know,
Infinity American. That's interesting because it looked very tropical.
Yeah, no, I mean, Croatia is beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful country, and it really has. Not entirely tropical, but it's beautiful. It was very warm when we were shooting it and everything. So, you know, it's a very, very beautiful place to shoot. I mean, there was a few interesting technical things shooting on that bus because it was just sort of a junker bus that showed up and we got on and we shot. That movie was shot in 25 days in countries. So it was quite a quick schedule.
Very quick for a film.
Yeah. We really had to walk and chew gum on that one. And we did a few little inserts and stuff afterwards. And certainly the re-photographing for all the hallucination sequences and the stop motion and stuff like that. That was all like second unit stuff done after the fact. But the main unit, the actual full-on main unit of the movie, was only 25 days. So I did discover that the darkening film they put on the windows to make them look tinted actually reacted with the polarizer I was working and created weird patterns in the windows. So if you look closely, you'll notice a weird checkerboard pattern in the windows of the bus. The
more you know. Character.
Yeah, I mean, we had no choice. The character had to be there.
So. Sometimes you can see that just wearing polarized sunglasses while you're driving if you, like, look.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, on their windows. It's like if you...
You
put your phone to the landscape view for portrait. Sometimes it does that if you have polarized sunglasses, like mm-hmm. you all of a sudden can't see the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, I used a system called the CineFig, which is a system of two polarizers put together to be able to control exposure and keep the lenses wide open quickly. And it reacts in a similar manner. So it's an amazing tool, but you have to remember it is basically... It has a lot of those same problems. Anyways, if you want technical.
But that way you can like do things with a wide open aperture shot. You don't have to worry about, you know,
constantly changing filters and things like that because the sun changes. You just turn a knob and I could do it remotely from my station where I'm supervising both cameras and everything. It's a great, great tool. I used it on Infinity Pool. I used it on the world's favorite movie, Firestarter. I used it on Orphan. No, I didn't use it on Orphan, but I used it on Forbidden Fruits, actually, because we shot that movie in 19 days. It was really quick. And we had to go really, really fast and always with two cameras. So to be able to balance the exposure of both cameras and frequently, the second camera uses a zoom lens, which is slower than the prime lens we usually have on A camera. The zoom lens is usually on B camera. So it was an easy way to balance out the exposure between both cameras very quickly.
I'm guessing it just pivots how the angle that they're at.
It's two polarizers working in opposite, and then you have actually a sort of calculation as to what the exact stop loss you're using. So much like an ND, you could say, okay, I want the equivalent of an ND 0.9, and I just turn a knob, and it suddenly is there. Like a lot of these Arri cameras have remote NDs, like physically inside the cameras, that you could put in, but they're limited in their strength and the amount of what they can do. And, you know, with this, I could adjust half stop, a third of a stop, and things like that to get really a clean negative, which is something I like to do.
For anybody who might see this later, the reason I picked up on that, there's this old trick where if you go shopping for sunglasses and it says polarized and you want to confirm whether or not they're actually polarized, there's this trick where you take two of them and you put them at 90 degrees to each other, and if it blocks out all light, then you know that they're both polarized. But if it doesn't block out all light, then at least one of them is not polarized. And so when you're describing this, I was like, it has to be working something like that, because why else would you do that?
It's two polarizers.
Yeah. It's like interlacing, kind of.
Yeah, basically. It's great.
Yeah.
Something you mentioned on Forbidden Fruit earlier that made me think of something. You said it was a much softer film as far as the lighting or the cinematography.
I
noticed in feature films, I don't know if I'm way off the beat on this, but it seems like, say for instance, with newer TVs, all the 4K TVs, one thing that's a little jarring for people that they don't like is how it looks too crisp, and it almost looks like a soap opera set, or like you're on. Or it looks like you're actually there. Mm-hmm. So is that because most cinematic film is intentionally softened and almost like intentionally blurred or a lower resolution so it looks less crisp? And when you see things in 4K, it looks odd because it's just too high a definition, I guess?
Well, I mean, it's a combo of what the artistic intention of the movie is. So, or the show you're doing, that's number one. There's a trend now. There was a trend at the beginning of digital cameras to use softer, more vintage lenses to go for a softer, more film-like patina, which I like very much. I like the sort of softness and organic aspect of film. Nowadays, on a lot of shows, on some of the big streamers, particularly the HDR, which is a different color space than standard HD, which has greater capacity for highlights to basically blind you. On many HDR films, either the titles or a lamp in the corner frame will be the brightest thing in the entire frame and will literally blind you. I don't like that look. I think it is a gimmick.
That's how, by contrast, you get the Vanta Blacks, though.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it depends on the movie. It depends on the narrative. Like, it depends on the show, you know, what the narrative needs, then that does. Forbidden Fruits needed a more 70s patina kind of giallo type of vibe to it. Okay. So that's what we did, you know. And also, you know, like we wanted the girls to look really good. And if you use like super hard shadows, contrast, the black levels are so deep that the minute there's a shadow, it's not very flattering light. So there's different techniques that
you use. Sam Miller's Forbidden Fruit.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to do specific things with the lighting too. And also the lighting is always narratively motivated. So I always work off of narrative motivation for how lighting is in a scene. So, you know, what are the characters going through? It doesn't always have to be a pretty picture, because maybe it's lit in a certain way for a narrative reason that will then adapt to something else.
This is why you do what you do and why you make the big bucks, because that is how it should be. Like, it shouldn't be exactly, as you said, like every scene has to be a pretty scene because it's visually aesthetically pleasing. You want the visual flavor, if you will, to follow the narrative. It's telling a story at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we did in Forbidden Fruits. You know, certainly I'm no fan of shopping mall lighting.
We could have just done the whole thing in shopping mall floodlights, because, that's what it would look like.
No. Yeah, I mean, we adapted stuff to make it a stylized version of that, but there are moments towards the beginning of the movie that are done with a warmer color temperature and you know, no shadows on the faces, more general light, and then that changes as the movie goes on, and the movie goes from warmth. If you play that whole movie on fast forward, you'll see that the color temperatures go from warm and slowly go cooler as it goes on. And towards the ending of the movie, it becomes more desaturated and more cool. Then something else happens in the movie. And anyways, I won't spoil it, but there's a cycle that changes and then the color comes back. So, but it's all like, we worked with Meredith Alloway, the director, very closely on these narrative concepts and how the lighting should be used narratively for these things. So
cool. Earlier, when you were talking about Infinity Pool, you had said some sort of comment about 1970s Vietnam War era thing, and I suddenly had this flash of imagining what that movie would have been would have looked like if it had been filmed in the 70s, you know, like in Vietnam type of area. A very different vibe, I think. It could have been very interesting, but, you know, that's a completely different movie. Anyway.
Yeah, it would be, but, you know, maybe not that different. You know, might have had a different aesthetic to it. Again, Infinity Pool sort of, when we shot it, it fit between, you know, I guess various world wars that we never say are world wars. It's like, you know, it seems to be World War III for the last 20, 30 years has been happening every few years, just unofficially. And J.G. Ballard's made some jokes about that too in some of his stuff. And J.G. Ballard is a big inspiration for us, as well as Brandon and the work we're doing. And we have actually a Ballard adaptation we're working on. Things like that has been announced. So, you know, that kind of predictive science fiction is always a reflection of society and what's going on in society. So, you know, I believe in the Sallows. I believe in the Texas Chainsaw Massacres. I believe in the Night of the Living Deads. I believe in disturbing genre pieces to be used as a rebellion against political injustice and fascism, no matter how extreme they go to be able to make their point. And, you know, some people will say, well, it's bad enough. We know everything's bad. Why are you showing us this? And I think it's important to have these movies as a reminder, because sometimes we can forget.
Sometimes we want to forget. Sometimes you intentionally just don't pay attention to the things. And that's kind of, art has always been political to a certain degree, and it can be used as a tool in that way.
Absolutely.
Tool isn't really the right word. Used as a...
No, tool's the right word.
Method. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, a tool or a canvas or something, a mode of communication, a mode of rebellion, to an extent, even though these are basically science fiction horror films, and people say, ha ha, how evident or whatever, but then you do it too. You know, anybody who'll criticize that, let's see what your rebellion against fascism is, because I'm not seeing a whole lot of rebellion against it these days.
I yelled at cars with a cardboard sign yesterday. It was fun.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Because the rest of the world needs you to help, because we kind of can't.
Yeah.
Help from outside. Our help inside is broken. We need help from outside.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah,
I know Canada's just not an option at this point, because we burnt that bridge, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, you know, bridges can heal. That's the one thing I would fucking love is for people to start deciding, maybe let's, you know, the old hippie, why don't we try getting along thing? You know, maybe the hippies did have a point.
The alternative?
Yeah, you know, maybe. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, sucks to feel powerless sometimes, but, you know, all you can do is take it one day at a time kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, and just do your best to make your voice heard, I think, is important. And, you know, the best that anybody can, like these protests this weekend, I think, is a way of doing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, on topics of better news kind of thing, is there anything that you can share about projects that are coming up, or do you want to talk about maybe some stuff that you have read or watched that you have enjoyed?
Well, I mean, in terms of the projects that are coming up, they're all stuff like I'm going to start a feature pretty soon. Normally, can't talk about it. We're working on a bunch of stuff with Brandon Cronenberg that I can't also talk about. But I also work as an associate producer on the movie. So, and Brandon is like my neighbor. We're like, you know, members of the family. You know, it's basically like a band I'm in, you know. So we work on the development of all of the movies from treatment phase on. You know, it's, I just don't do a cinematographer's job on Brandon's movies specifically. So also with Rob Cotterill, another friend of ours, we're all involved in, you know, the development of the pictures. So there's some very interesting stuff that Brandon's working on now. One of them we were supposed to be shooting now that got delayed a bit, but, you know, that's a big, big, crazy movie, that I love very much. They're all genre pictures, of course. And they're all genre pictures that, go for it. So, you know, we've been working on those, have this other picture that hopefully will be beginning prep in a couple of weeks on. I shot some of Gen V that's out now, this TV show. So, you know, that that's out if people want to see some of season two of Gen V, which, you know, that's out there for the kids.
That's a good show. I think.
Cheers, cheers. You know, it... it's interesting the way things have gone on with the network that that puts out Gen V, you know, and the content of Gen V, which seems a bit in contrast to the politics of this network.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to
pleasant surprise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've heard rumors that I think I've heard confirmed rumors that the director of The Sadness will be attempting to do a crossed either show or movie of the comic The Crossed. And right. Before shows like The Boys and Gen V, I was just like, that'll never happen. You can't put that on television, but maybe now.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, so I have a bunch of stuff coming out. Just can't really chat about it yet. Forbidden Fruits is the last thing that's come out that I shot. You know, I have basically I spent a year developing and getting ready this new Brandon movie that got pushed. So, you know, that was sort of a year of not filming, prepping a movie that now we'll be doing later. So I'm going to do something else in the meantime. But that's the movie business. That's the pitch of business.
Yeah. Yeah. We got about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got about 15 minutes. I was just going to ask, looks like Forbidden Fruits is in theaters right now. It's not streaming anywhere yet.
It is in theaters right now. So check that out. Again, it's this very specific kind of movie. So it's if everyone's going in there expecting a nonstop gore fest and things like that, that this is not that movie. If you dig Jennifer's Body and if you dig Heather's, then you might have a chance of being on its wavelength. If you don't like the vibe of those movies, then it's probably not for you.
OG Heather's or reboot Heather's?
OG.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, very OG. I haven't seen Heather's reboot.
Neither have I, but I think it did happen. And
yeah, okay. No, OG. And, you know, like even something like if Lisa Frankenstein actually had an R rating, it might be more along those lines. Forbidden Fruit's an R rated movie.
Oh.
And it has gore towards the end.
Okay. We like gore.
Yeah, we do.
What I was saying a second ago, we got about 15 minutes left. Is there anything that you have seen that you want to shout out that you have enjoyed yourself?
I think there's a lot of really interesting movies that are coming out lately. Probably one of the best I've seen in a while is a movie called Surratt, which is kind of a horror movie, just not everybody is necessarily saying it is. But that's basically rave hippies meet sorcerer. Or The Wages of Fear. It's probably one of the most impressive sensorial films you could see. I strongly recommend seeing that in a movie theater if you can. Surratt, it's called Neon, put it out in the United States and Elevation in Canada.
S-I-R-A-T, it looks like.
S-I-R-A-T, yeah, Surratt. That's probably one of the most impressive movies I've seen in quite some time. Even a movie like The Bride, which everyone was like, let's shit on this movie. I like The Bride. I thought at least
it looks good to me.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice movie. Another movie unfairly shat upon, I think, because the director isn't a dude. But I thought it was great. I really loved 28 Weeks Later, The Bone Temple.
That was so good.
I thought that was a really interesting picture, much better for me than the 28 years later, the previous one.
I sometimes wonder if that made 28 years later Bone Temple a little better because of it in contrast. Not to say that 28 years later is a bad film. It's just it's a very it's very guerrilla style filmmaking, like Danny Boyle did with the first one.
Yeah.
Wait, was Danny Boyle?
It was Danny Boyle. Yeah.
But Bone Temple was really good. Like
Bone Temple,
the side arc with Samson and removing the shirt.
Yeah, and the 666 number of the beast musical number is
I clapped. I clapped in the theater.
It's to behold. So I think there's a lot of really strong genre pictures that are coming out. I mean, on the indie front, I'd recommend checking out a movie called Dead Lover, which I think is really good. That's a Toronto movie that I really enjoyed. Dead Lover. There's a lot of really exciting genre stuff coming out, genre adjacent stuff coming out. I think I saw The Plague the other day, which I thought was really quite good too. It's a IFC released movie, again, kind of genre adjacent, really a horror movie, but I thought that was an interesting picture.
That was one that's more about the horrors of puberty and growing up and cliquish
Yeah, amazing performances with the kids and things like that. And it, you know, I think No Other Choice, the Park Chan-wook movie, is a really good movie too. And that is like a very Hitchcockian type thriller with, again, horror, you know, elements. Anything that calls itself a thriller is basically a horror movie in disguise. I thought No Other Choice was a really good picture too. I think there's a lot of really good stuff. Unfortunately, these movies aren't doing like amazing in cinemas. Like really, really, really good movies are coming out and doing so-so or okay at the box office. And that's sad, considering then some other thing comes out and does gangbusters.
Been one that's done really well. Sinners.
Which one? Oh, Sinners is great. That was.
I didn't have my mind in the Oscars mindset.
But Sinners is great. I love Sinners. I enjoyed Weapons too. It was really great to see those movies celebrated.
On
such a mainstream level, their movies I think are interesting. So, Sinners particularly, I really thought that it was such a radical picture in a sense, and to have so many people love it goes to show you that maybe it's not just who you think that's going to the movies. Unfortunately, they're just not going to all of them. And some movies that I think yours.
I don't mean you personally. I mean, in general speaking.
Okay, the royal you.
Yeah, yes. The royal you. Yes. But, you know, I mean, you can change that by going to see Forbidden Fruit. Mm. But, you know. But yeah, I mean, look, I think the genre has always been a place for outsider voices. I think it's always been a place for diverse voices. And it's really good to see all voices still being celebrated within the genre, even though, you know, the thing is you forget that within the genre we are in a bit of a bubble. Mm. So for something to really make money theatrically, it has to strangely land with the non-genre fans as yeah. well.
Yeah.
You know, and not every movie can,
yeah.
you know, some movies are made for a certain lexicon, a certain point of interest. Yeah. So, you know, that's something to remember that we are still, we're more mainstream than ever. We're more accepted than ever. The genre movies traditionally, because our budgets tend to be lower, are the ones that will go out and still have some success or some chance of success or some chance of making its money back. You know, genre movies are still commercially one of the most viable genres, if not the most viable genre that has never really gone away. Yeah. So that's something to not forget also. It's just when movies cost $90 million, then that puts you in a different sort of zone, but if the budget's reasonable, it doesn't need to be this gargantuan success in theaters.
Godzilla Minus One, I think, was a budget of $10 million.
Yeah, I mean, it, done in Japan, you can do things financially that you couldn't do, you know, in North America with a union crew and within that sort of infrastructure. Very, you know, in Asia, you can do a lot.
Spend as much on craft services.
Well, you know, I think just the cost of everything is different, and just the way of working is different, and you'd be surprised how not all the craft services are that great, even on big union shows. You'd be shocked, actually.
You know. Well, hey, unfortunately, the timer on this thing doesn't give us an exact time, but it looks like it's only like 2 or 3 minutes left. So I just wanted to give us sort of a good wrap here that, you know, obviously people can go out to the theaters and see Forbidden Fruit. If they want more information mm-hmm. on it or on any of the work that you're doing, they can come to horrormakesushappy.com, go to the episodes page, look for your name on our episodes page. That's a link that, you know, if you click that, it'll take you to Karim's bio. And then we've got a link to his Facebook page there and some other things. We've also got Chris is doing his live stream in half an hour on our Discord server. There's a link to our Discord server on the main page of horrormakesushappy.com. We've had a lot of pleasure talking to you again. It's been, like I said, like 5 years. Next time, anytime you want to come back and chat with us, let us know. We'll be here. We'll be planning on doing this every Sunday, you know, for as long as we want to do it, I guess. Anytime. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. And as the French say, bon courage, good courage, all.
I'll let you say that because I can't.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers.